From Crazy Hood Productions, I'm Jay Havana, and this is Family Ties. Today's episode is about Crazy Hood member Rich, aka Dro. From Boston, he grew up admiring his Uncle Pete, who he looked at as more of a father figure. His uncle taught him everything, but when he moved to Miami, Dro felt out of place. It was the friendship with his Crazy Hood family that made him feel at home. Listen close as he shares his story. Always authentic, always crazy.
Another day, another dollar, my story to tell. Another failed piss test, I'm back to jail. Jail cells overcrowded with killers and thieves. Couldn't work, motherfuckers, roll up your sleeves. I'm Comptown representer, I'm letting them know. I keep it hood with a nigga, so hand me my dough. I don't play when it comes to bread or the raps. Instead, get the killer motherfucker till his vocals dead. My crazy hood overthrowing, shut up. Nigga, you see the pistol showing from the CPT. Down with EFN, between the beef and the peace, local line is thin. The real and the fake, couple lies get in. Couple of strip
my whole. All right, man, we are recording, so here we go. So, who is Rich, and where are you from?
Rich, I'm the oldest of four. I have two sisters, one brother, Nancy, Jenny. My youngest, my brother's name, Jason. I'm from a city called Boston. Dorchester, Boston, to be exact. I was born in 75. I grew up off a street named Hancock. Well, the street name was House Street off of Hancock. And I grew up off that street, man. And, some of my fondest memories as a child is from that street. And, Boston was a city, man. It was heavily influenced by hip hop. And that street brings so many memories as far as, like, I remember summertime, man, we would turn on that fire hydrant, man, and we be playing in that fire hydrant water.
Yeah.
I had my big wheel, the big wheel in the front and the two small wheels in the back. And that street was like a dead end. But it was like a hill. So the top of the street was the dead end. It was like a hill. So I'd be on the big wheel, fire hydrant, turned up. And I had good times. And the street pole, we had a milk crate. And we put that up, and that's niggas used to play ball, with the milk crate on the street pole. So we had good times, man, back then. It was nothing but good times back then, man.
That's awesome. In Boston, is that where you first discovered hip hop?
Yes, sir. That's the first place I discovered hip hop. Like I said, I was born in 75, and I have my mom is the first child of six siblings. And one of her siblings is my uncle Pete. And he's like, I want to say he's maybe like seven years older than me, or eight, I'm not too so on the exact number, but he's not too far older than me. And that nigga right there, he's the one I looked up to when I was younger. Because, as far as a father figure, I didn't really have no father figure. And he was the person I looked up to, because my father wasn't really in my life like that. He was there in and out. But my Uncle Pete, he's the one I looked up to. He's the one I wanted to be like. And, mind you, I was a kid and he was a teenager at the time. So, I remember him having he was a DJ too. So, he had a bunch of fucking records. you know, and he made tape. So he would buy a bunch of 12-inch records, put them on tape. He would, I guess he would sell some, give some to his homeboys. And, you know, and I was just there just looking at the process and just watching him and, you know, and that's when I discovered hip-hop, man, through him.
Wow. So, yeah, what type of records was he playing that influenced you?
Man, he was playing everything, man. Like, I mean, some of the first records I remember that really influenced me was like Run DMC. Like, Run DMC, as far as Boston, to me, that shit like shook my city. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because them dudes right there, Run DMC.
2 years ago, a friend of mine.
Like, I mean, you had. You had the older music. You know what I'm saying? The older hip hop and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But Run DMC, them dudes right there, they had like that B-boy feel. They had the Dookie rope chains.
Mm-hmm.
They just had that look, that feel, that style, that swag. I guess I could relate to them as far as like, you know, is hip hop and, you know, they was just, they had so much influence. Like my city, a lot of niggas, every nigga, I want to say, rock the Adidas.
My Adidas walk through closet doors and roam all over Coliseum floors. I stepped on stage at Live Aid. All the people gave and the poor got paid. And out of speakers, I did speak. I wore my sneakers, but I'm not a sneak. My Adidas touched the sand of a foreign land. With Mike in hand, I told took command. My Adidas and D close as can be. We make a mean team, my Adidas and me. We get around together.
That's how much of influence they had on our city. Like, there were certain neighborhoods you couldn't even go in unless you had Adidas. If you go in a certain neighborhood with Nike, you was getting fucked up.
Wow.
That's how much of an influence that Run DMC had on our city. And, I mean, you know, like I said, he was my uncle. He was buying 12-inch making tapes, and I mean, you had Run DMC on them tapes. You had Eric B and Rakim, Big Daddy Kane, Houdini, Fat Boys, MC Light. You know, even MC Light, that's a female MC.
Yeah.
When you heard Paper Thin, that shit was so fucking hard. You know what I'm saying? For a female MC, you heard Paper Thin.
Yeah.
I mean, UTFO, The Show, Dougie Fresh, Slick Rick, The Show. Them are the songs, man. Like, that was the shit back in the day. I remember he had made a tape with all those artists and all those records on that tape. And, you know, that's my mom. My mom's the oldest. And I'm the oldest grandchild, you know what I'm saying? So, at the time when my uncle came out with that tape, I wanted a fucking copy. Yeah. But I think it was in front of my mom, and he was like, oh, I can't give you a copy. It got curse words. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I got so fucking hot that we had small records. We had I forgot what they call it, man, but it was like a wooden fucking box with like the small, we was playing the small records on that shit. We had small records in there.
Okay.
I got so mad at him because he was telling my mom that he couldn't make it for me or some shit like that because it had curse words that I was so upset at him at the time, man. I took them records and like was throwing them records at him because I was so hot, man, because you know, in front of my mom, he was acting like he couldn't give me that record, but I heard the shit. He was playing the shit in front of me, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
So, but, yeah, I was heavily influenced through him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my cousins, I have a cousin named Marie.
Mm-hmm.
I have a cousin named Vlad and Daphne that I'm close to. And they all older than me. And I remember, you know, my block and my street, man, when Marie, I used to rock her Adidas. Like, you know, back in them days, man, I was the kid. They was older. They was the teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
I used to rock my cousin Marie's, like, sneakers. She had Adidas with the fat laces. Mm-hmm. I used to rock her shit. Her shit was big. Her shoe was bigger than mine. But I used to rock the shit because the shit was so fat.
Yeah.
And that was like everything to me, man. You know, hip hop, man, it's always about the swag, the music.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the gear, the sneakers, everything had to be on point.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I would rock her shit. And, you know, the females, when it came to Adidas, they would wear dude shoes. It wasn't no, I don't remember it being female or dude side. It was just straight, females would rock dude Adidas. So
right.
She had Adidas with the fat laces. Mm. It was a little bigger than my size, but I rocked the shit anyway. My shit was coming off in the back, but I ain't give a fuck. You know what I'm saying? We used to go walk up the street, up and down the street with the fucking big radio.
Mm.
And you know, that was the shit back then.
Yeah. So in your time in Boston, looking up to your Uncle Pete, he became a pioneer in the hip hop scene in Boston, right?
Oh man, yeah, he a pioneer when it comes to that underground shit.
Uh huh.
He definitely a pioneer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, he was that dude right there, man. He taught me everything I know. Like I said, I looked up to him. Everything he did, I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
The nigga was a hustler, a street nigga.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every element of the street, that was him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And as far as the Boston scene, like you said, he was a pioneer of the underground scene. I mean, when you talk about the early 90s, the mid to late 90s,
mm-hmm.
Niggas that was in Boston knew that nigga.
Right.
One, they respected the nigga. He was a street nigga.
Mm-hmm.
And two, his whole thing back in those days was try to get niggas together because you had a lot of divide in the city. Because a lot of niggas in the city, every different borough, niggas had gangs, niggas had, you know, niggas had conflict.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That was just a Boston up north thing. Every block had different niggas. Niggas had gangs, niggas had, you know what I'm saying? Niggas had problems with every shit. But his whole thing was like, yo, if I could get niggas together, it'd be better if I could get niggas together. If niggas could unite, then we could probably make a name for ourselves or make some noise if niggas unite. You know right. what I'm saying? And he put out a Newberry Freestyle.
Okay. What's that?
So basically Newberry Freestyle was him getting different MCs throughout Boston neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
like the hottest MCs in every fucking neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And getting them niggas together and putting them on the fucking, you know, tape, a CD.
That he was making. Mm.
And niggas respected him in every hood. So, you know, he did that and it wasn't no problem. Even though niggas had conflict outside the music, but when it came to the music, he got these niggas together. He came out with the Newberry Freestyle. And, you know, it was a big thing in the city at that time, the time he brought that out.
Mm.
You know, I think he was fucking with a DJ called G-Spin.
Okay.
I guess, you know, that was a big DJ back then in the city, G-Spin. I guess he a New York dude, right? He in New York now, a radio, big cat in the radio industry in New York right now, but his name was G-Spin. He was the DJ for that Newberry Freestyle shit. But yeah, he's very major in the, you know, the underground scene in Boston, man. Everybody in Boston that was on that shit know that nigga. You know what I'm saying? That was him, man. And I can't really tell you as far as the run, how long he had it running for, but right. He started that whole shit, and he started a lot of the movement of the underground shit. He was a promoter in Boston. He promoted a lot of MCs. I mean, one of the artists, the main artist he had on his label, he had a label called Detonator Records.
Okay.
And one of the artists on there, his main artist is an artist called Acrobatic, who was dope. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he had other dudes on there, a dude named Terminology from Boston.
Okay.
He put out Terminology's first single. He had Terminology on tour. He did tours and shit back then in different cities. You know what I'm saying? He had Terminology on tour. I think Terminology was in high school, skipping school to go on tour with these niggas. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Acrobatic, you know, like you said, he was the main artist. And he had a dude named Breeze Everflown from New York that he had. I mean, he did a lot of things for hip hop, for the industry. I remember he got a deal with MCA. But like I said, he was a hustler. So we used to go to New York all the time. New York from Boston, like 4-hour trip. And niggas used to go out there. I used to go with him and get work. And you know, we used to go to Jerome, man. And he also, like I said, he got a deal with MCA. There was I don't know if you remember Raven Simone.
Yeah.
Remember Raven Simone from the Cosby Show?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so back in those days, I think it was like 91. Man, let me tell you something, Jay.
Yeah.
Them days, a lot of them days, like my high school days, on up to after high, is blurry. Because them are the days I was hustling, getting fucked up, doing all kinds of shit.
Right.
So,
right.
Like, the timelines might be off a little bit, but...
All right.
I can't tell you the exact year, but we went to MCA because he got a deal. Because Raven Simone, she was a little child at that time, and she did a record. She came out with a record. And my Uncle Pete, he produced one of the records. He was doing beats back then and all kind of shit in music. So he made a beat, and I don't know like the details, but somehow, some way he got it to MCA. And his beat made the cut on the album. So he had to deal with him. So I remember going to MCA with him. And that was when Mary J. Blige was first coming out.
Whoa.
So we went to MCA. He went up there to conduct business with them. And before we left, they gave us the Mary J. Blige tape before the shit even came out.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
I had a key. It was me, him, and a female he was with at the time. They gave us each a copy of Mary J. Blige, her first tape, What's the 411? So I had that shit even before it came out in the store, you know what I'm saying?
Damn.
So, I mean, he did his thing, man.
So while your uncle was doing the label, what was did you have a role in the label?
No, I didn't have no role in the label. You know what I'm saying? But
You were just learning from him.
Yeah, I was just learning, man, just supporting everything he did.
Sure.
And it's crazy because, you know, you would figure I'd do something in music because I've always been around, like, music and you know, people that's been in the industry and doing music, like my uncle. And I have another uncle. He fuck with music, too, but he fuck with Haitian music. We Haitian.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So he, my other uncle fuck with Haitian music, and he had you know, a studio in the basement of the house my grandmother owned in Dorchester, in Boston. And that uncle had a studio in the basement, and that nigga used to have like all kind of bands in the basement, you know, practicing and, you know, doing their shit down there. Them niggas used to smoke cigarettes, and I'm like a little kid.
Hey.
These niggas used to smoke cigarettes, fling they butt of the cigarette, you know, on the ground. And I'm like fucking 8, 9 years old, however old I was,
right,
picking up they shit, trying to smoke the shit. You know what I'm saying? I been doing crazy shit. You know, yeah. I'm niggas as kids, man. And, you know, it was good. I always been around music, man. And the shit is crazy. Shit is crazy.
Music and hip hop in particular has been a big part of your life.
Yeah, major part of my life. That's my first love. Like I said, I'm from Dorchester, and my mom is the oldest out of six, and we lived in a house, man, where it was all of us in one house. You know what I'm saying? And the beauty about that, man, is like I grew up listening to different types of music, different type of genres.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I had an aunt that listened to reggae.
Yeah.
So I was listening to that. I had another uncle. He listened to soul, R&B. Mm-hmm. You know, funk. So I was listening to that. My aunt's husband, he listened to a lot of pop shit, like Phil Collins, Madonna, Sting, you know, Billy Joel, shit like that. So I have a wide range of shit I used to listen to. So I just respect music, period. But
that's good.
My love, the shit that got my heart was hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's my first love. That's my baby right there, hip hop. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you know, I remember, you know, just being in the house, and we was on the top floor. His room was on the top floor, and like I said, he had nothing but like 12-inch records. And he was, you know, he was basically a DJ back then, and making tapes and doing his thing. And I would just listen to him in his room, just, you know, spinning records and making shit. And shit was dope, man.
That's dope.
You know, he's still in the game, man.
That's great.
You know, right now, he's, you know, he still got the label Detonator Records.
Cool.
He's in Atlanta right now. He's working with an artist named Hilo Hefner out of Atlanta. He got a company called Diff Audio Visual Design. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's on the gram, Diff Multimedia Events. That's DIF Multimedia Events. Check him out on the gram.
Cool.
So, you know, he when it comes to shows, he does all the lighting and the sounds and all that.
Yeah, and speaking on shows, I know E told me that he was actually the first person to bring Eminem to Boston.
Oh, man. Yo, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Yo, my uncle called me. He's like, yo, I want you to come to the Bean because I'm doing a show that's rapping at Eminem.
Yeah.
So I ain't know who the fuck Eminem was. He was major on the underground circuit.
Yeah, yeah. With
but
the outsiders,
I didn't really follow him, so I didn't really know who he was. So my uncle had me come down there to help him with the show. So he told me, oh, he's doing a show, Eminem. So I go, he fly me out. He bought me a ticket. I go to Boston. He fly me out to Boston. And he's having the show in Cambridge at this spot called the Middle East.
Okay.
It's like the Middle East is like a club type venue in like the basement of a fucking building.
Okay.
I went there. I see this white boy come out on stage, Eminem. You know, he rapping, got his shit going on. And the white boy was dope. And no lie, the show ended. I came back to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And like a week fucking later, Eminem was fucking everywhere, blown the fuck up. Back by Dre, he was blown the fuck up. My uncle was able to get him to do a show in the fucking Middle East right before he fucking blown up.
Wow.
If it was after that,
yeah, it would be tough.
That shit wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy.
But that's how my uncle, that's how much he grind, man, and that's how heavy he was involved. I don't know how he got made the connections or...
He made it happen.
He made it happen. It was fucking Eminem, one of the fucking biggest icons of fucking hip-hop, got him to perform at the Middle East in motherfucking Cambridge.
Crazy.
And I look back now, man, that shit is fucking crazy, bro.
That's crazy. All right.
That's fucking crazy, but you know, that's my uncle, man. He always have a way to make shit happen.
I was having a conversation with E, and he brought up that your uncle, actually, through your uncle, you guys were able to set something up to where the All was able to get the nationwide distribution for that album, the Who's Crazy album from the Alliance, right?
Yeah. Back in the day, like I said, man, my uncle, you know, he was heavily into the music, and you know, he was well known in Boston, and yeah. There was a company called, I believe it was Land Speed back in the day. They distributed, he got them a deal where they distributed the All's album. I believe it was Land Speed. Now I think it's called Traffic Entertainment or some shit like that.
Okay.
But it was through Land Speed that he got the album distributed, and you know, they did some business together. Which was dope for me, because you know, these are my niggas, and this is my uncle that I,
yeah,
you know, looked up to and was in the music, and both these niggas. So it was dope, man. It was dope, man.
And you were able to combine everybody together to do something. Yeah. That's dope. That's very cool.
That's my thing, man. That's like, yeah, you know, that's, man, I'm always trying to hook people up, put people together, and just better everybody, man. That's me, man. I'm always trying to, you know, better everybody, and you know, life is good, bro.
Yeah, well, and it's funny that you say that, because it's just like your uncle too. You know, your uncle, when he did those Newberry tracks, where he got everybody together, it was all about bringing people together and doing something great, and that's a reflection from him. Where it's coming, where you're getting it from, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man, that's real shit. And you know, that's another thing about my uncle, man. He's a good nigga. Yeah. Some niggas misunderstand him, you know, because he a real nigga. He ain't gonna bite his tongue. He gonna tell you how it is.
Yeah.
And a lot of niggas might not get him at first. A lot of niggas might not like him.
Right.
But at the end of the day, he's looking out for your best interest.
Yes. When did you end up moving from Boston to Miami?
It was was around 80-45.
Oh, okay.
80-45, my mom went on vacation to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So she went on vacation, came back to the crib, talking about, yo, pack your shit. We moving to Florida. So, I mean, as a kid, man, you know, I was upset.
Right.
But, you know, as a kid, man, that's your mom. You're going to follow your mom. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And at the time, like I said, I got three other siblings.
Yeah.
We have a different father.
Okay.
My three other siblings, they have the same father. I have a different dad. My dad wasn't around like that. So at the time, she was with their dad, and that was my stepdad. And you know, when she said that, we got up and we left. I remember we drove to Miami, man. I think it was like a hatchback, burgundy red Pinto.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, and we just fucking drove to Miami.
Wow.
And when I got to fucking Miami, I was like, what the fuck is this? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is, you know, it was like a culture shock because, you know, my hood was way different from like what I'm seeing now. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
My hood was predominantly, you know, black, Hispanic. There was like one white family on my block. And in Miami, it's fucking clean. You know, it's just a way, way different, man. And it was hard for me to adjust that first.
Right.
It was real hard for me to adjust that first. And, you know, I started elementary in Miami. And one of the first kids I met, man, is a dude named Tony Martinez.
Mm.
And that's my dog to this day. You know, I'm the godfather of his son. He's the godfather of my son. You know, he was a hip hop cat too. When I first met him, you know, he looked like a break dancer. So, you know, it was shit like that, dudes like that that I met that made me feel comfortable. Yeah. And I started to, you know, be like, okay, well, Miami, you know, Miami's okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
When I first started school, it was mostly like, you know, white and Hispanics.
Yeah.
There was like only one, I think there was only like two or three other black kids in my school when I first started.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But I met Tony, and he's like, he's half Puerto Rican, half Irish. But like I said, he had that B-boy look. So me and him just bonded, like, off-rip. And there was, like, another black kid in my school named Jamie Green. I still fuck with him to this day, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it was crazy at first, man, moving out here, man. It was kind of hard to adjust to. But, you know, eventually I adjusted.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, one of the, like I said, I always been around hustling. I always been around the hip-hop music. And I met a white boy, too, when I was in elementary.
Mm-hmm.
Named Jacob. And, you know, this is crazy because when I came out to Florida, I moved to Kendall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Kendall is known back in the day for the, you know, all the cocaine cowboys and all that crazy shit back then.
Right.
That you know, a lot of these drug dealers and big kingpins, they fucking lived in Kendall.
Crazy,
you know. But as a kid, I didn't, you know, you knew about drugs and all that shit, but you didn't know about them kingpins and all that shit. You heard stories.
Mm-hmm.
But that kid Jacob that I met in elementary, I used to go to his crib. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a white kid, and his dad, at the time, I would hardly see his dad. His dad was like a pilot.
Okay.
So his dad, I would hardly see his dad, but, you know, he'd tell me his dad be on trips, flying or whatever. He was a pilot, whatever. Mm-hmm. But one time he took me to the attic. He had a little attic in his crib.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a fucking box of fucking weed.
Mm.
But the weed was like, it had like sandy and it was kind of wet and moist and moldy.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, you know, I know what weed is, but I didn't, like, you know, I didn't fuck with it.
Right.
But my first instinct was like, yo, let me get some of this shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So yeah. I had a cigar box. That fucking weed, I put as much as I could in that fucking cigar box, and I had this shit for a while. And then when I went to fucking junior high, you know, I tried to fucking roll the shit up and sell the shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And that same kid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Years later, fast forward, like, you know, I lost contact with that kid. It's been fucking years. Elementary. Now in my fucking 20s, my mom, where we living at the time, our next door neighbor, I talked to the next door neighbor, come to find out that was his fucking, one of his sisters. This is like,
whoa.
I'm talking about years. I'm like in my 20s. In elementary, I was like fucking 10 years old.
Yeah.
I lost contact with dude. Now in my 20s, my mom living in this complex where now that dude, that same dude's sister is my neighbor. So I'm talking to her and she telling me, you know, what her brother doing, and I get back in contact with him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he come in town because he living somewhere else now. He's out of Florida. I think he live in Massachusetts.
Okay.
You know, not too far from Boston. And so he comes to Florida, and then now we meet up again as grown men.
Mm-hmm.
And so he tells me now, yo, my dad used to, and back in the day, I didn't see his dad come around no more. So they told me back then that his dad died in a plane crash.
Uh-huh.
So now as a grown man, when I see it, he tell me the real shit.
Okay.
He's like, yo, my dad used to fly drugs for Colombian niggas, and they murdered that nigga.
Whoa.
You know what I'm saying? So,
damn.
That's just to show you, like, how in Kendall, like, a lot of people was tied into that shit and they ain't even fucking know it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in this fucking kid's crib. I could have got murdered in that kid's crib.
Yeah.
And not even know what the fuck I was into. You know what I'm saying?
Fuck.
But, you know, that's just one of them things, man. You know, Kendall, man, that's where I first moved to when I came to Miami. I fucking love Kendall to the core.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kendall don't get the recognition, you know, because, you know, it's so-called not the hood. And back in them days, man, you know, it was about the, you know, bass music, niggas out the city, Liberty City, Carroll City, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That got recognition. And, you know, but I love fucking Kendall, man.
Yeah.
88.
Moving to Miami and you being so close to your uncle, did that play like a big part? Like, did you miss him a lot when you moved out, not being around him and being able to be around the music and all that?
Yeah, because like I said, man, I always looked up to him like a father figure, man, because, like I said, my dad wasn't really there. I would see my dad every once in a while, But my uncle, man, you know, to me, he was like a father figure. He was like the youngest uncle.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the same shit I was on. You know, he listened to hip hop. I love hip hop because of him. And so it kind of fucked me up. You know what I'm saying? Moving right. away and things like that. And a matter of fact, man, you know, I had a lot of issues when I came
mm-hmm.
To Miami, man, because you know, it was a culture shock.
Mm-hmm.
It was you know, just it was a real big difference, man. When you come from a city like Boston and you move to Miami and shit was the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of hard for me to adjust at first.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like I said, I'm a hood nigga from the city, and so I started fucking with, like, you know, I met a bunch of cats. Like I said, I met my own boy Tony Martinez. That's mm-hmm. my brother to this day, and I started fucking with different people.
Mm-hmm.
But I started getting involved with that gang culture. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying?
Right.
Miami life. Shit is real out here in the field, nigga. Niggas don't fuck around. Get your fucking brains leaking, nigga. Leave your ass floating in the motherfucking river. All you FOT niggas, when y'all come out here to my city, y'all niggas better not disrespect, nigga. Sex, drugs, money, murder. That's what it be about there, player. Niggas don't fuck around, nigga. This MIA, nigga, respect that.
Miami life. It's much more than drugs and guns, although that's still the number one way to earn your funds. It's the land of player hatred. Nothing is sacred if a nigga.
So I was getting into a lot of shit.
Right.
This like in junior high now. Fast forward junior high.
Right.
I started in elementary, but like junior high, you know, I started fucking with all these IMP niggas, man, and I went to juvenile hall for like 2 weeks. And, you know, I was just doing all kind of shit, man. When you come from a broken family, man, your pops ain't around, and, you know, you have issues within you, and you run in the streets and things like that, man. You tend to get into the wrong shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
You know, I end up moving back to Boston my first year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Now, when I moved back to Boston, now my grandmother, she moved out the city because my uncle got shot. My uncle Pete that I told you about,
mm-hmm.
he got shot in the neck.
Oh.
So she had to get the fuck up out the hood because... you know, my uncle, he was running the streets. The nigga was about that street life.
Mm-hmm.
And he got caught up, got shot, so she had to get the fuck up out of there. So she moved to a place called Arlington.
Mm.
It's a suburb area, not too far out from Boston. And, you know, when I moved back, I lived with her, and now I'm in Arlington. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, I met, you know, when I was in Arlington, I went to a high school named Arlington High.
Mm-hmm.
And that school was straight suburb, and, I'm feeling out of place again because...
Mm.
You know, I'm a city nigga, man.
Yeah.
And I go from fucking with, you know, I'm from the city, I'm from the hood, and then I move to Miami, I'm fucking with these gangster niggas, and I'm getting in trouble. I went to juvenile, and I moved back to Boston, and now I'm like in a suburb area where there's a lot of white people, and, but they had a program called a Metco program where there was inner city kids that went to that school. When you go to a lot of the suburb schools, they have inner city kids that go to these schools.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's only natural that's who I'm fucking with, the inner city kids. So
mm-hmm.
I met a nigga named Jamal Green. God bless his life. He passed away. I met a nigga named Kareem. God bless his life. He passed away. Mm-hmm. And I met a nigga named Mo. God bless his life. All these niggas that I met that was close to me.
Yeah.
All these niggas is gone.
Wow.
And that's the niggas I used to roll with when I went to school in Arlington, man. And I had great memories there too, man.
Yeah.
And those times, man, it was dope because, you know, that was like, shit, I want to say 1990.
Yeah.
And, you know, that era in hip hop was dope too, man.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we had a lot of artists and a lot of shit that was going on, and that era was real dope.
A lot of great music came out during that time.
A lot of great music, man. A lot of great music.
Yes. So how long did you end up staying in Boston before you moved back to Miami?
Man, I stayed there for a little bit, man. I think I might have stayed for like a year.
Okay.
See, it's crazy because I moved back to Boston, then yeah. moved back to Miami, then I moved back to Boston.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? So I was like kind of back and forth for like 90, 91.
Okay.
You know, 90, I want to say like around 91, that's when, you know, I think that was the year that me and my uncle, we went to MCA, and he had got that deal with the Raven Simone project and shit mm-hmm. like that.
Okay.
And then 92, I went back to Miami, and that's when I think after 92, I went back to Miami, and I've been back ever since. I ain't never tried to move back to Boston. You know what I'm saying? It was I left Boston to go back to Miami in 92.
Mm-hmm.
I think my first year back, my first year in Miami back to Miami in 92 was after Hurricane Andrew.
Mm.
And
that was big.
My cousin Vlad, like I told you about my cousin Vlad, and he came and I think he picked me up at the Greyhound station with Adrian and Tony. That's how I met Drain.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the first time I met Drain.
So he knew your cousin Vlad.
Yeah, he knew my cousin Vlad. They built the bond. Him and Vlad was real close. My nigga Tony that I told you about, Tony yeah. Martinez.
Uh-huh.
He lived in the same complex as Drain.
Ah.
His crib was like right next to fucking Drain. So
wow.
When all that hurricane shit happened, Vlad was staying with Tony, and then when I came down, I ended up staying with Tony as well.
Wow.
And Drain was his next door neighbor, so that's when I met Drain. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Drain was just a cool nigga man from London, man.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And, you know, me and Drain ended up becoming cool.
Yeah.
And I started going to Sunset.
Right.
And when I went to Sunset, and I met Hector too. Let me bring it back to Hector. I met Hector in junior high.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I went to Hammocks, and I met Hector when I was in junior high.
Mm.
And Hector was one of them niggas, man. I knew off rip he wasn't a Miami nigga. So that's what made me and this nigga cool.
Right.
Because, you know, I'm from up north. He from the Shy.
Yep.
You know, and that nigga had like Pumas on with the Lee jeans, and nigga had like a silk shirt on. You know, so I knew he was he had to be up north or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just the nigga swag, I knew he wasn't from Miami, so that's what made me the nigga get cool. And then, you know, for a good minute, man, I was hanging with him,
that's
his
cool.
brother Orlando and Edwin, and I ran with them niggas for a minute, man.
Right.
You know, but as far as CHP, man, I can't really tell you, like, who it could have been either Hector or Adrian that introduced me to them niggas, man.
Mm.
You're listening to the Family Ties podcast series, A Crazy Hood Story. We also want you to check out Drink Champs and all its affiliated podcasts, like Dugged Out Thursdays, A Drug Dealer's Dream, and many more that are being added to the network. So check us out at drinkchamps.com. Also check us out at crazyhood.com. And stay tuned for new episodes of Family Ties dropping every week.
It was either Hector or Adrian that introduced me to them niggas. I went to Sunset, and I remember meeting E.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to his crib, his pop's crib in Kendall. And, you know, I remember just, you know, just the whole movement, man. I respected the whole, what he was doing, man. He had, you know, the crazy hood. The niggas would go to the house, have meetings and all that shit.
Yeah.
And one thing I respected about the nigga EFN was his business ethics, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, because like I said, man, I've been a nigga, man, that been on my hustle, and I always been a hustler, I always been about my business, and I respected what he was doing on the business level, you know what I'm saying? Because my whole thing was on the street level,
mm-hmm.
but he was like on a more legitimate level, which at the end of the day, my dream and my goals was to become legitimate. You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Right, yeah.
So I always respected, and that's what kind of, you know, caught my attention about him. You know what I'm saying? Because in retrospect, man, when you look back in them fucking, in that era, man, and we being high school niggas, there wasn't too many high school niggas you know that was on some business shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's true.
Yeah, niggas wasn't on that shit back then. So when you see a nigga that's like into what you doing, like on some business shit,
mm-hmm.
like for me at least, I was like, yo, this nigga right here, I can fuck with this nigga right here, because, you know, at the end of the day, my whole goal is to, you know, become legitimate as far as like on a business sense.
Yeah.
So I seen the whole thing where he was doing, you know, the label, the clothing store,
mm-hmm.
and all that shit. And I was fucking with these niggas from, like, I was the type of nigga, man, I fucked with a lot of crews. I was all over the place.
Yeah.
I was doing my thing. I lived in these buildings called Bradley Park. And I was doing my thing back in the day, and I fucked with a lot of niggas, man.
Right.
There was these brothers named, there's these brothers named Jose Reyes, Tony Reyes. You know, I used to fuck with them, Carol Parks, Arthur Mallory, Renee Mallory. You know, my cousin Daphne, my cousin Vlad.
Mm-hmm.
My cousin Daphne went to Killian, so I used to fuck with her crew. She hung around all them Killian motherfuckers. I used to hang around with her crew. I used to be all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I just knew so many niggas because I was in the street and I was doing my thing.
Right.
And I just knew so many people. But CHP, I was fucking with them niggas too. And over time, man, I just got closer and closer, man. And next thing you know, man, I was, niggas was with each other all the fucking time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It was just like a you know, niggas built a bond. And
yeah.
One thing about them niggas, man, you know, in life, you come across a lot of people and you learn a lot of lessons in life. But one thing about them CHP niggas, man, they some real niggas.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And anybody that know me, I'm a type of nigga, man, I keep it 100 with everybody I fuck with. I'm a humble nigga. I'm a real-ass motherfucker. And when I say real, in our culture, a lot of people get shit twisted when you say, like, a real nigga. I'm not talking about gangster. I'm not talking about hardcore or a thug nigga. A lot of niggas get it twisted when you say real nigga. That's what they think of. But nah, you ain't a real nigga. Ain't no killer. Ain't nothing like that. A real nigga that's loyal, that have respect, that has honor.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And one thing about EF and one thing about all the crazy hood niggas is that them are the type of niggas, man. They was real niggas, man.
Right.
And in your life, when you see yourself around more and more around certain people, it's because these are motherfuckers you could trust. These are motherfuckers that's real. And these niggas was real, man.
Very true.
And I'm a type of nigga, man, that's thorough with that. Like, loyalty, that respect, that honor. I'm very thorough with that, and that shit is everything to me. Anybody that fucking know me know that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? These are the type niggas, man, I could trust around my wife. These are the type niggas I could trust around my kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's a lot of phony niggas out here.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of phony. There's a lot. Yo, in this world, there's a lot of phony individuals, period.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? We come across phony individuals every motherfucking day of our life.
Mm-hmm.
And why I've been around these niggas, why I continue to be around these niggas is like my fucking family, my brother. My brothers is because these niggas is fucking real to the fucking core. Every single fucking member of THP, I ain't never had to fucking question. I ain't never had to worry about. You know what I'm saying? And
yes.
It's like, you know, everybody got good and bad about them.
Right.
We've all had differences within the crew. We've all had arguments. We've all had shit that we've been through.
Mm-hmm.
But these niggas here, I could trust these niggas with my life. I could trust these niggas with my family. I could trust these niggas with my motherfucking kids.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And
yes.
That's why, to this day, 25 years later, it's 100.
Mm-hmm.
It's 100. I fuck with all these niggas. Like, these niggas is my brothers, man.
Yes.
These niggas is my brothers, and you ain't gonna find no other crew, no other, you know, family that embody the shit that we live by and the shit that we honor. Like, niggas is still tight to this day. Niggas still.
Yeah.
I was with them niggas last night.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
At a podcast, nigga. Yo, yeah. we out on the street acting a fool like we in fucking high school still.
Yeah.
That's how much love we got for each other, man. Like, niggas is grown men now, and we get together and we act a fool like niggas is still in fucking high school.
That's,
you know what I'm
up.
Saying? That's why, yeah. I love these niggas, man. No matter what stress you go through in life, whether it's because, you know, I'm 42 right now. I got 5 kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I got a family.
That's great.
You know, I'm going through shit in my life and relationships and family and things like that.
Yeah.
But when I get with my brothers, man, that shit is like a stress reliever, man, because, you know, I know the niggas got my back.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we out here for each other, bro. We all we got.
Yeah.
A lot of phony shit, a lot of phony people out here. Dog, we all we got, man.
Yeah. And there was a lot of times in your life, just hearing your stories, where you felt out of place. You felt you didn't have that connection with people because you were moving so much. And then
and then
you found it with CHP. You found it with them.
Real shit, man. And that's what held us all together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we all got our stories. We all got different things we've been through. We all got our struggles. But at the end of the day, when everything's said and done, we fucking held each other down. This shit was God's plan. And if there's one role every nigga in the clique had,
mm-hmm.
that was to support each other and support the movement.
Yes.
You had niggas that had different jobs that did different things in the clique. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You had niggas that rap. You had niggas that did beats. You had niggas that promote.
Yeah.
And you had niggas that was just a part of the team. They ain't really necessarily do none of that. You know, like me, I never, you know, I didn't have talent as a rapper or a DJ or nothing in the music. I tried. You know, I tried to be a graffiti artist. I tried to rap. Listening, yo, like I said, Run DMC turned my city out. That's when I first, you know, loved hip hop, sucking MCs, all that shit. Them niggas was coming out with. But when I heard Eric B. Rakim and Big Daddy Kane,
mm-hmm.
them are the niggas that made me want to rap. So I tried to rap. I had the fucking dictionary. I was trying to remember shit, get mm-hmm. my vocab right,
mm-hmm.
and put shit together. But, you know, that, you know, I tried it. But the thing with me, man, I also got a problem where I got that shiny object syndrome. Like, I always been a hustler, and when I see something shiny and I think I can make money or do something in that,
you go for it.
I go for it. I stop what I'm doing. I don't finish what I'm doing. I stop what I'm doing and go into that.
Gotcha.
So I've tried every element. I've attempted to do it all, but it wasn't just me. I mean, it wasn't me. So I never continued on that path. But you know, I always had love for the music. And you know what I respect about EFN and the whole CHP? Mm-hmm. Like, when you look at crews back in the day, like the 90s,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the music, a lot of that era was like, niggas was on that hardcore shit.
Mm-hmm.
So you had a lot of crews that they were trying to be hardcore, like thugged out, gangster.
Yeah.
All that shit. And I think that played a role in their demise.
Yeah.
That played a major role in their demise. Where CHP, when Eric birthed CHP,
mm-hmm.
his whole thing was about the essence of hip hop.
Yes.
From every fucking level. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
From every level. Like, other crews, they was just on that hardcore shit. Niggas wanted to be hard. Niggas came to shows. Niggas started problems. Niggas did all that shit. Eric, EFN,
mm-hmm.
that nigga was about the essence of fucking hip-hop, like, on every level. That's why he had a fucking clothing store. He had events at his clothing store where he had graffiti artists, he had DJs, he had MCs, every fucking level of the fucking game.
Mm-hmm.
Because he respected the culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The nigga respected the culture, and he embodied everything that the culture was. Everything the culture had to offer.
Right.
Where other niggas other niggas exploited the culture.
Yes. And it's shown. You know, keeping that essence of hip hop, it's proven its longevity.
Oh, man. Oh, man. And let me tell you something. This nigga had everything against him, bro.
Yeah.
When I tell you everything against him, like, one, the nigga Latin.
Mm-hmm.
And back in them days, it was hard. It was hard coming out and you Latin trying to break through the fucking industry.
Yep.
You only had a couple niggas like, I mean, you had Joe, Fat Joe, but he was, you know, he had the backing of the DITC.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? This nigga, Eric ain't had no backing by niggas. He was a nigga straight out of fucking Kendall.
Mm-hmm.
Spanish nigga out of Kendall. And then you from Kendall, like, that's not even considered a hood.
Right.
He had a lot of shit against him. But the nigga held his ground. And he persevered and, you know, kept his integrity.
Yes.
And had loyalty to the fucking gang, had loyalty to the culture, to where he did a lot of shit that, you know, that helped him withstand, like, time and help him, like, to this day.
Yeah.
Be relevant in the culture, be relevant in the fucking game.
Yes.
Where a lot of niggas gave up, would have given up, and the niggas still doing his thing. The niggas still in the culture. He's a lot, like I said, a lot of niggas exploited the culture.
He never did.
Yeah, he never did, and he's allowed the culture to use him as a platform to bring relevance to, like, Kendall, to the culture, and just, like, you know, he's a legend in the fucking, in the business, man, and fucking Kendall. So you got kids in Kendall right now that's heavily influenced by hip hop.
That's because of him.
That's gonna look up to him.
Yeah.
And through the shit, the body of work that he's done for the fucking culture, for fucking Kendall, they gonna look up to him, yeah, and give them the fucking, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Give them the fucking the belief in themselves that they can make this shit fucking happen.
Yes.
You know, and that's one of the things I respected about E, because EFN, because the nigga was like laser sharp and concentrated on what we know today as Crazy Hood Productions.
Yes.
And, you know, that's one of the things about him on the business aspect. He's been able to just stick to that one thing, focus on that, and to now what it is today and where the platform has brought him to.
Yeah.
And what's crazy, you know what's crazy is that, you know, we used to get at him like, yo, like back in the day, he was always stuck on this old school shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like we, you know, a lot of DJs back in that day, back in them times, they was trying to be, you know, up to date, and you know, a lot of them DJs, they was on that screaming and rewinding and doing all that shit DJs did back in them days.
Right.
You know, and all on the new shit, coming out with the new shit. But EFN, dog, he was always on that old school. He wanted to play old school. Like, if he did a party or he did a set, it was always the old school.
Right.
And he stuck to that no matter what. Well, no matter what niggas try to tell him, he always wanted to play the old school. And I respect that now looking back, because you have to respect the old school and know the old school to understand what's going on today.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? It's like you have to know your past to know your future. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
That's one thing about that dude, man. He always was adamant about the old school and getting that out to the masses and educating the masses about the old school and how it's important to know, you know, where this shit started, where this shit came from.
Yeah.
Because like I said, he embodied every aspect of the game. And to this day, like when you even look at the Drink Champs has a lot of these older niggas that we so much looked up to back in the day. And the thing about the Drink Champs, like in the media and in the business, you see shit, but you get bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So what the Drink Champ does is that it put the pieces of the puzzle together. Like, yeah. Shit you know half about, you might have known half the story or bits and pieces. So the Drink Champ, when they interview these artists from back in the day, mm-hmm. you're getting the full story. And then you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. That's what was going on back in the day. This shit makes sense now.
Yeah, very true.
And he's bringing you the real from back in the day, from these older artists, these artists that meant shit, you know what I'm saying? Because to me, man, the 80s and the 90s, those were the golden ages, man. That's when hip-hop was like, man, that shit meant so much to me, man. That shit birthed, that shit raised niggas, man. The culture raised us.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? One thing I could say, man, we all children of the culture. Hip-hop, that's our family. We all children of culture. Hip-hop is our parents.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, hip-hop, our parents, would be proud of EFN. Would be proud of THP. Because niggas been loyal, honorable, respectful, and never compromised or sold our soul to the devil for fame.
Yes.
Niggas always kept it 100. Niggas always keep it 100 to this day. We never compromised that. You know, that shit lives forever, man. That shit continues to go on.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? There's a lot more to come. This shit ain't gonna stop at Drink Champs or, you know, look what's evolved now. Like, you got Family Ties.
Yeah.
You know, this shit don't stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's cause, like, when you have loyalty, when you real, sky's the limit, because you know, you gonna have so many blessings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I respect all these niggas from day one. A lot of niggas I done knew, a lot of crews I done hung with. You got a lot of niggas that's just phony, man. Niggas is phony, man. Niggas always trying to come up off, you know, each other or do shady shit. Like, CHP always been real from day one, man.
Damn.
That's why niggas still fuck with each other. Niggas still hang out with each other. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's family to the end. And if anybody need a bail bonds, make sure you come check Exit Bail Bonds in Miami. We get you out. You know what I'm saying?
You got it, bro. You got it.
We get you out. Exit Bail Bonds, Miami, man. Just check us out if you ever get in a situation where you in a little trouble. We do it. Hey, we worldwide. We do it in any state. You know what I'm saying?
In our next episode, we meet another member of the Crazy Hood family, Charles, an Army veteran, Crazy Hood soldier, and close friend of EFN. Tune in and listen to his Crazy Hood story. New episodes of Family Ties come out weekly. Family Ties is a Crazy Hood Productions. This episode was produced by DJ EFN and myself, Jay Havana. Our theme music is titled Southwest by DJ EFN, featuring MC8, Blue, and Cam, with production by The Guild. If you like what we're doing, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps new people find out about the show. Also, check us out on Audio Boom and CrazyHood.com. Always authentic, always crazy.